Our next speaker is Paula Huth, did I get that right?
You did,
Huth,
yes.
Of the New York State Department of Health, and she's going to be speaking about support of electronic data for medical countermeasure response operations following the identification of hepatitis A infected food handlers at multiple dining establishments.
Thanks. And thanks to those of you sticking it out. I know it's a long day. So during November to December of 2015, an unprecedented mass hepatitis A vaccination campaign was coordinated, and it was coordinated within a small rural county in western New York State, and it was in response to the identification of hepatitis A infected food handlers at multiple dining establishments. Our first case of confirmed hepatitis A was diagnosed on November 12, 2015. They were a food handler at a fast food chain that we'll call fast food chain A. The case worked while symptomatic, and while the case mainly had cashier front end duties, they did handle drinks and other ready to eat items. For those of you who may not know, hepatitis A is spread fecal orally, so it's very important to exclude ill food handlers. Within 2 days of this case identification, the local health department mounted a mass medical countermeasure campaign. Seven mass vaccination clinics were rapidly launched from November 14th to 20th, and on the heels of this was also public communication about exposure criteria and who in the community was in need of post-exposure prophylaxis. And this is just an example of one of the actual media advertisements that went out. Basically, it identified, you know, the implicated restaurant, the location of the restaurant, the times and dates and locations of the places persons needed to go who were at risk to receive vaccination or treatment. So 18 days following the diagnosis of case number one, a second confirmed case of hepatitis A was diagnosed in yet another food handler on November 30th. This case was later identified to be a close contact of case number one, but they had not chosen to seek any sort of treatment at the previously offered vaccination clinics. The new case was an employee of fast food chain B, so a different restaurant than the first case, and this case also worked while symptomatic. Again, exposure to customers could not be ruled out. This case handled a variety of ready-to-eat food items. So within 3 days of this case being identified, the local health department again had to mount a mass vaccination campaign, and they were rapidly launched from December 3rd through 10th, and again public communication followed. So both medical countermeasure campaigns utilized what we have in New York State called the Countermeasure Data Management System, or CDMS. It's a huge application that resides on a secure Department of Health portal, and it is accessible to all local health departments statewide, and it's used by Department of Health staff during these medical countermeasure campaigns to capture patient data, which includes demographic information, clinical history, exposure history, and of course consent to receive the treatment. And the great thing about CDMS is that it can be tailored to support any medicine, any health supplies dispensed to a person in a community who is at risk of having been exposed to something, and it's regardless of the hazard and agent involved. So it can be a vaccination, it can be an antibiotic, it can be a bottle of water, it can be whatever the exposed persons need. And CDMS is really instrumental to effectively respond to this hepatitis A public health emergency by all levels of the health department, local, regional, and state. CDMS itself, like I said, is a huge application. It has done dozens and dozens of functions. I'm going to talk about three that I felt were most beneficial to the medical countermeasure campaigns at hand. Another thing about CDMS is that there are two interfaces. Basically, there is a public interface and a secure interface. I'm going to be talking about the pre-registration website that sits on the public interface, and then intelligent forms and ad hoc reports that sit on the secure interface. So the pre-registration website is intended for public use, and it allows members of the public to pre-register for a clinic visit on a specific date and at least during a specific time frame. It's accessed via a public website, which those are the links. And the good thing about this is when a person goes on to pick their time and date for the clinic they're going to attend, they also answer a variety of screening questions and put in demographic data. And so all this information can be imported into the secure site, the CDMS site, and it's really beneficial to have this information prior to the patient arriving at the MCM clinic. And those who pre-register are fast-tracked once they get to the clinic, so there's almost like a fast pass. What the intelligent form is, this is used by Department of Health staff. It's for medical screening. And so what it is it's the ability to add a decision matrix to the medical screening form. And so the matrix is based on a physician-improved on medical screening questions and prescribed logic. And how it works is that depending on the response to each question, subsequent questions only have to be answered if they're still applicable. If they're not, they just fade to the background and they don't need to be answered. And the great thing about this is that it reduces the skill set necessary to perform medical screening. Without an intelligent form, you would need medical staff to administer these questions. With the intelligent form, it allows for non-medical volunteers to administer the medical screening questions, and you're going to be ensured that proper procedures are followed. The generation of ad hoc reports, these are very good as they yield real-time demographic and clinical information about the clinical operations of the clinic. You can get patient demographic reports, which is basically how many people attended today, from what counties, what age group, and then you can filter those reports to basically say how many got, you know, vaccine today, how many got IG today, how many were deferred for vaccination. And you can also get timing reports, which are essentially throughput, so how long did it take for a patient to come into the clinic, sit at the registration table, and then ultimately leave. And these can be generated as often as needed, typically, and in cases like this, they're generated daily. So overall, receipt of hepatitis A, post-exposure prophylaxis by at-risk individuals, we had over 3,200 for both campaigns receive PEP. For the first campaign, 2,769 received PEP, and for the second clinic, 482 persons received PEP. And the breakdown, if you look, is pretty similar among both campaigns, with about half of patients receiving IG, and then about 34% receiving the adult vaccine, and about 13% or so receiving pediatric vaccine. The number kind of faded in italics is persons who arrived to the clinic but ultimately did not receive a treatment. And this can be due to a variety of reasons. Medically, they could have been medically evaluated to have it not be safe for them to receive either IG or vaccine. They could have been determined to not be at risk. Maybe they actually didn't go to the implicated restaurants when they were asked again when they were being screened. We could have found a record of past immunization, which then wouldn't warrant them needing another one. There could be vaccine uptake issues, and sometimes patients just get all the way to the shot and just don't want it, so they end up leaving. So in the use of pre-registration, in the first campaign, about 38% utilized the function, and in the second campaign, 53% utilized the pre-registration function. So for the pre-registration, specifically as to how it applied for our clinic, you know, many individuals who presented did utilize it, 38% in clinic one versus 53% in clinic two. A reason for this could be word of mouth and that fast track option. So this happened all within a very tight community. It definitely got media attention. People spoke to each other. You know, they could have said, wow, I waited a long time, but my friend who pre-registered didn't wait at all. That probably had a helping hand to do with it. And this is just great because the more people you have that pre-registered, it just means the data for them is already in there. They don't have to Once they get to the clinic, the demographic information, all that information doesn't need to be filled out again. It's already in there. And by having that prior to the start of the clinic, Department of Health staff could look at the data, you know, in the day prior and see, you know, how much staff do we need? Do we think we need more staff? Or, you know, what's the age demographic here? Do we think we need more IG versus vaccine? These are just a couple screenshots of the actual pre-registration site that was used. I've just blocked things out if need be. And so this is this exact website you would come to as a public person who's seeking post-exposure prophylaxis. You think you've been exposed to the restaurant. It tells you a few things you may need. It tells you what steps you're going to have to take to register, and then you begin by selecting the county where you would like to attend the event. So most of the persons at risk lived in the county in which the restaurants were located. So they would choose their county. These are two separate screens. I just combined them because they were small and figured it'd go faster. On the left, this would pop up after they selected their county. There'd be a list if there was more than one clinic going on at the same time. A lot of times it would have it listed for, you know, two or three days in a row. It would give the name of the clinic, the time of it, the location. The person would choose the one. If they wanted to go on Monday, they'd pick this one. If they wanted to go on Tuesday, they'd pick the one below it. Once they pick it, they'd go on to see the next screen, which basically is their the time slots available. So they could go in. Usually it's in a half hour, 2 hour increments, just because you can't guarantee someone an exact time. And it tells you how many appointments are left available, and the person would choose the button where they want to choose the time. From that screen, they'd be guided to the basically where you'd collect the demographic information. So the person would put in their name. Anything with red is very hard to see. Is required. It's basically the name, their address, their date of birth, and then they also are asked to include their emergency contact information and their primary care provider. After that, they're guided to the screening questions. They can answer yes, no, unknown. These will be asked again even when they arrive to the clinic, even when they're fast-tracked, just to make sure nothing has changed, just to make sure they fully understood the actual screening questions. But this information really gives the Department of Health kind of a heads up in really knowing what we think we'll need that next day when we analyze the data. And once they complete that step of the answering yes, no, or unknown to the question, they receive via email, or they can just show it on their phone, or if not, they'll still come up on the clinic if they just give their name. But they're asked to print this ticket because it can be scanned when they get to the clinic. And it basically just gives, you know, their name. It reminds them of the date and time and where they need to go. The intelligent form at the clinic really expedited the medical screening process. We could use non-medical volunteers instead of medical volunteers at this step. And for hepatitis, it is pretty tricky. There are a variety of different factors that go into whether someone should receive vaccine, whether someone should receive IgE, or whether they need to be medically evaluated. And so that's what it does. It guides the screening staff through patient outcome based on the built-in logic, and from that they either will be told to dispense vaccine, IG, or refer the patient to medical evaluation. And this is what you would see as the DOH person. Maybe you have no idea, you know, like what actually this person would get ultimately, but you go through the questions, and when an endpoint is reached, this box will pop up and it'll either say administer Hep A, vaccine, IG, or refer to medical evaluation. So it really anyone can be filling out the yes, no questions without a medical background. And the ad hoc reports are essential, as all staff higher up is going to want to know, you know, how many people came today, what's our inventory looking like? So just the ability to generate these reports, providing situational awareness, patient counts, age groups, how long did it take people to get through the clinic. It also assisted in determining the staffing thresholds. I mean, staffing is a huge issue, especially when you're having these multi-day or multi-day long clinic. So when you have a week worth of clinic, the first one, there were seven clinics throughout the week. I mean, you really need, you can't always ask the same people to be there the whole time. So it's really, this information is really useful to determine, you know, what, how many medical staff, how many non-medical staff, rotate people through, and really track the use and inventory of critical assets. There was a lot more IG needed than we thought versus vaccine. And so by having that report, we knew if we needed to order more IG for the next next day. This is just an example of how you'd pull one of these reports. It's basically all just a, it's not a pick list, but it's just you would check the different variables you want, and then when you press go, it'll give you an Excel file that you can then go through. I also wanted to mention how important it was to activate a call center. In the media campaign, it also gave a number for like a hotline that persons of the public could call if they had any questions. And this really was a great way to field public inquiries. It was a great way to support pre-registration if someone called. And, you know, they did, in fact, frequent one of the restaurants during the time of exposure. We could say, hey, do you want us to pre-register you right now? If they weren't comfortable possibly going onto the computer themselves and doing it, or if they didn't have access to a computer. And I think even more importantly, it helped to exclude worried well. So people who may have went to the chain, but not the actual chain that was implicated, we could say, hey, you're fine, you don't need to come. And also, we were able to exclude a lot of persons who were at risk. They did go to the restaurant. They did go during the time frame, but they were previously vaccinated. And how we knew this is in 2008, New York State has implemented a law basically requiring all healthcare providers to report immunizations given to persons less than 19 years of age to DOH via this New York State Immunization Information System. And so all children under 19 have this as their record. And so if we got on the call, mom was calling her and her two kids went to the restaurant during the time frame, we could easily look up in NYSIS to see if her children had received vaccine, because if they did, it would be in there. Adult information can be added to NYSIS. It's not like it'll block you out if you're over 19. It's just that not a lot of doctors do it for persons aged older than 19, just because it's not a law to do so. But we could really, a lot of persons under 19 who did go to the restaurant during the time frame, we were able to exclude because we could find their record of previous vaccination. And that explains why the pediatric vaccine was only like the 13% in both of them, and we were able to exclude a lot of people. We also built in a question to the application on the bottom there, where for persons greater than 19 years of age, do they consent to having their records go into NYSIS, which is just beneficial in a way to look these things up later. And another thing about CDMS that we improved over the years is that if a child did go to the clinic, they hadn't been vaccinated previously, and it got into the record on CDMS, it'll automatically get uploaded to NYSIS. So it's not like the county has to go back and then make a record that child received it. They're automatically synced. So anyone under 19 who receives a vaccination in CDMS, it'll get linked to their NYSIS account. I just wanted to show the magnitude of the outbreak. I was just kind of showing how the electronic data system supported us, but it was a huge outbreak that required a lot of resources. Overall, there were 8 confirmed cases of hepatitis A identified within the county, with report dates ranging from November 12th to December 24th. 7 of the 8 cases were EpiLinked. They were either family members or significant close contacts. One case, we were never able to find any association to the other cases, and her illness source remains unknown. And the county did so much work because they had to identify hundreds of potential close contacts. If you look at the dates, it spanned Thanksgiving. The family had a huge Thanksgiving buffet dinner. At least from that, 100 contacts were identified. A lot of the cases also attended a community center where, again, there were activities going on that could warrant exposure. And one case was also a resident of a mental health facility, one where you could come and go, but it still there were still exposures that could have occurred at the facility itself. The Department of Health did conduct active heightened surveillance for additional cases through the new year until February, but no new cases ultimately came. And this was very unusual for this small county. I think the last confirmed case of hepatitis A they had recorded was in 2007. So this was not something they were used to dealing with. In conclusion, you know, CDMS can be used to support a wide variety of public health response efforts when post-exposure prophylaxis or treatment is indicated. It's used yearly for seasonal influenza clinics. Again, it's been used more than once for hepatitis A response. It's often used for Tdap vaccinations whenever there are flood events, and a lot of counties just practice using this as well, because to keep people skilled in how to use CDMS. So it's been used for drills and exercises involving anthrax, plague, and pertussis. And of late, just because of people liking the application and using it more frequently in the counties, there's been alternate uses of CDMS. One is for animal rabies vaccination clinics, so to get your pets vaccinated, it's being used for that. There's also one that's developed for radiological community research center events, which is essentially planning for if there is a radiation exposure event. This system will be used to take readings from people who may have been potentially exposed to guide their follow-up. And very recently, and I'm just going to mention this super briefly in this slide, is that we have used it for Zika virus testing approval. And basically, so this is in New York State, not New York City. But in New York State, the health provider will contact the local health department where a patient resides if they think Zika virus testing is requested. And then using CDMS, the county will complete what's called the Zika virus testing form questionnaire with the patient to verify that testing criteria is met. Essentially, it asks about travel history, it asks about sexual history, symptomology, pregnancy status. So it's pretty neat in that we're getting all the epi data up front, and then testing will ensue if they meet that criteria. And if testing is approved by the county, the patient will receive a Zika virus testing authorization ticket, which looks very similar to the usual ticket. And this, you know, will either be emailed to the patient or the patient, or the if they don't have access to email, the county will fax it or send it directly to the hospital where the patient will be going for specimen collection. But in New York State, at least, the hospital will not collect the patient specimen for Zika virus testing unless they are given both this testing authorization form and the written order by the physician themselves. So it's our way to capture the epi data beforehand, as well as to verify that the person who is receiving testing should be tested in the first place. And I just want to acknowledge the brains behind CDMS, which are colleagues Lou Anne Lance and Dave Moreau. And then on the epi side, really it was a huge amount of work by the Seneca County Health Department, as well as our state regional office and the state office of BCDC and the Bureau of Immunization. And I can take questions.
Thank you. Ed Lipschitz in New Jersey. I was very interested, particularly in using CDMS for Zika testing.
That I'm sure will be a whole presentation maybe next year. But
I'm curious as to why you don't cut out the middleman, why you have the provider call the county into the data, why not just have the provider enter the information?
We just thought that was too much of a burden on the provider themselves. We didn't think they would get, and they're not used to using it at all because they're not in the normal receipt of the audience using it. It's always kind of been local health, even though this is the public website, so they could have gotten to it. We just didn't feel that they would have had the knowledge to use it right off the bat, but they could have.
Rachel. Wiseman from Texas. And after people registered, did you match them prior to the clinic against the immunizations registry?
We didn't do it beforehand, no. So they could have still come in. There was no, but we could, we would, when they presented again, you'd pull up their information and you'd go through the question, you'd go through the screening questions again, just because you don't always know if people pick the, you don't want to all of a sudden just give them IG if they mistakenly put yes to something they weren't really sure about. So that was re-asked at the clinic, and so if they said yes, that they had received it, we pretty much took their word. If they said no, we would always offer, do you want us to look it up, type of thing.
And are you using the system to do the follow-up second vaccine? Should we call
you patients? We went back and forth. You certainly could have. I think for this one, we just asked them to follow up with their provider for the second one. But they didn't offer a second clinic. But you may... That's been like an argument for different, like anthrax or something, where you'd want them to come, where you'd want to make sure they had it just for protection or what. So you could do that, though. They didn't this time.
And how did you get that much immune cloth?
We, that's why I think the Bureau of Immunization, because they have...
Just the manufacturer, not even...
It's hard. They have certain contractors they contract with, and it literally came from California, I think, even. I think there's a big supplier out there. I'm just trying to think from the meetings I was in, because that wasn't a facet I was involved in besides saying, we need more. But it was a huge amount of IG. It certainly wasn't in-house. We had to get it from all over.
I apologize if this is the same question that this gentleman asked, but the pre-registration for these people you spoke of was done by whom?
For Zika?
No, for the hepatitis A vaccine.
So pre-registration, the individual would go to themselves, right, to
okay.
That website.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were saying. How were they, these were convenience store restaurant customers, how were they contacted, and then how were they encouraged to pre-register?
It was all through media. Really?
Yeah. So the media would actually say you could pre-register.
Yes. They would do that, and then Facebook kind of would take it out of control once it went from there, because it would say, hey, it was a very, because it happened in such a small community, it was very word of mouth as well, and
okay.
That would probably account for why at the second clinic there were so much fewer persons. Well, it was a lot of overlap. These were two fast food, you know, chains within the small county, so a lot of the persons who went to the first one may have went to the second one, but they already had received their vaccinations, and so now they didn't need to.
Did I understand the slide correctly? That there weren't any cases linked to either to the restaurants?
Yeah, we did not find any directly linked to the restaurant. We still are the case where we could find no association. That case did go to one of the restaurants, but it was deemed outside of the exposure window. It was really the 2 weeks, 2 weeks prior to onset of symptoms of the food handler to 1 week after. In that case, I think went there like 3 weeks before.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you don't know if the case is not recalling that or didn't admit that, or who knows. We weren't ever able to find an overlap. So there's a possibility she had food served from one of them, but. Yeah, sure.
We wrestle with the HIPAA outbreak response, and our local health departments would have made me and showed up at my door if I'd asked them to put on a vaccine clinic like this. Is this standard in New York State to with the food handler, or
it would have been standard that they at least initiate. New York State's local rule, so it's like it's the job of local health to pretty much start the investigation, but they could have asked for much more assistance than they did, and they did not. They just really took it and ran with it, and it's testament to the county itself. They're very hard, they're small, they're very hardworking, very diligent staff, and I mean, I'm still shocked that they didn't ask for more state assistance. I mean, we provided it in the way of CDMS and trying to, with the call center We certainly did supply some public health nurses to them, but if it were a different county, I could imagine an entirely different result. They just really all hands on deck for those. It was like a month and a half at least.
We have a real concern that when we have a food handler with hepatitis A, the local health departments won't. And we get distinct pushback, and they say they can't mount that kind of clinic.
Yeah.
And I think,
I mean, we, at the state level, what helps a little bit is, so Luann Lance, who is one of my acknowledgments, we all know how to do it, but she can do it within 5 minutes, where it might take the rest of us an hour. She sets up the campaign in CDMS, so it, she'll say, what dates do you want it, what times, what are the locations. We have, the screening questions pretty much remain the same once you have them set. They're not going to change. And she will do all that. She can literally do it in a matter of 10 minutes. So that's all set. The link never changes. It's always that go to clinic. So, I mean, that's always there. And then really they're used to, the counties are used to doing these, you know, like it used to be when there was more preparedness funds, they had to do like yearly drills using CDMS. It's kind of tapered off to certain select counties now that receive money. But they're very used to doing, you know, like a 1 or 2 day one. This one was really unprecedented that it was like 7, that, you know, 3,200 people. This was huge for this tiny county. And then the fact that after that one ended, they had to mount another 3 in a row. They really could have asked for more help, but it was the same group of workers. They didn't sleep. But they.
Who paid for the vaccine?
Yeah. I mean, the county used up what they had, but I think after that we supplied it.
Yeah, I mean, it was an enormous number of vaccinations and IG given, and you know, I was thinking certainly with the first person, from my memory of working hepatitis A, which was a number of years ago, it's maybe on the kind of ambiguous as to whether, I mean, the person didn't seem to handle ready-to-eat food. It sounded like the second one did, though.
The second one definitely more so than the first one, but the first one did handle drinks, and they did handle certain items that could have, they would have touched things had they not washed their hands properly that were consumed, yeah. You know, prior.
And they have to have diarrhea, and then maybe you might consider thinking about, I mean, the recommendations are so wishy-washy for the food.
Yeah, I mean, we do really scrutinize the food handlers and make sure that it's valid that we're putting these clinics on. It's not just like, oh, they have Hep A, let's roll with it, let's do it. We really make sure that they had symptomology, they worked while they were ill, and these, you know, it kind of, there was a presentation earlier, it's just they were ill, but they needed the money. They weren't going to take the time off. It was...
Yeah,
these were one employee. The second one actually had a very generous sick policy, so it was kind of surprising that the person, but I think it just went on for so long, they may have taken a day off, but now they're not going to take 2, but they were still symptomatic, so you wrestle with that because you try and try to really not have to, and we've had those before where the person has worked while, you know, they've had symptoms, but we deemed that we really, you know, the hand washing facilities were there, coworkers vouched that they always wore gloves, and we haven't done stuff. So it is a call that's made by the state, regional, local. In neither one of these could we say we're good. We fully think people weren't at risk. So
I'd like to thank all of our speakers again and give them a round of applause.